This is Cloistered Away, a podcast for mothers, homeschoolers, and women eager to develop a rich family culture within their homes. Here, we move against the modern hustle and cultural noise to slow down and consider how to live with wisdom, beauty, and joy in the various places in which God has set us. I'm your host, Bethany Douglas, the voice behind the Cloistered Away website and Substack. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Hello, and welcome back to the Cloistered Away podcast. This season, my husband Mark and I are talking about the foundational ways that we have created a fruitful home. In previous episodes, we have talked about ways that we govern our souls as individuals with the Lord, and then also the way that we relate to one another in marriage. Today, we're going to begin shifting to talking about how we relate as parents to our children. And we're going to begin by talking about sons. Mark, do you want to say hello?
Yeah, hello. I'm here. It's also important to mention that we had sons first. We had two sons before we had two daughters. Mm-hmm. And so I guess we were kind of tackling the topic from that vantage point, you know, early. And both of them are nearly in their 20s now. So we launched into it and didn't really know, I think probably like most parents, don't really know what to expect. We have our experiences that we have from being children and then growing up in our own families of origin. But, you know, there was a lot of it that kind of felt like we were winging it.
Mm-hmm. That's true. We are truly blessed to have been able to parent both sons and daughters. We have two sons and two daughters. And as Mark said, our eldest are boys, which was easy to talk about first. But I do think that also in an increasingly degendered society that we really are having the question as parents, do we raise our children in the same way? Does it belittle the dignity and worth of a son or a daughter if we parent them differently? So Mark and I think not. And so today we're going to talk specifically about sons, and in the next episode we'll talk more specifically about daughters, the places that there have been overlap and ways that we have made offerings that are similar to our children, all four of them, but then ways that we have specifically parented each differently too.
Yeah, so. And I would just jump in and say that the reason we don't think that you raise them exactly the same way is because we want different outcomes for them. They will perform different roles and they relate to the world around them differently. And so while it's true that as they're little kids, maybe the differences aren't that great, but especially as they move toward teen years, that pathway really diverges quite a bit. You know, culturally, there's this sort of weird moment where even Christian families feel this tension of like, well, we want our daughters to be fierce and tenacious and sort of a Wonder Woman approach to femininity. And yet there's a lot of those characteristics that we would say, no, that's really what I want more for my sons. I don't necessarily want those results for my daughters. So there was some diverging point there around the teen years. So I know mm-hmm. that we're going to get into that.
Yes. And we'll talk more about the girls in our next episode. But I do think for the guys, even as Mark and I have had this conversation in so many different layers and iterations over all of our years of parenthood, there really is a true break at the pubescent years. So when at that, you know, as you're having those preteen years in 9, 10, 11, somewhere in there. But then it seems for us, we have made a very conscious decision to celebrate womanhood and manhood at age 13. And so for our family, there was a big shift too. So let's talk about childhood first, then we can talk about the teen years since they varied a little bit, just so everybody can kind of follow along on some sort of linear path. But I guess I'm wondering, you know, thinking back to our early years, that we find out we're pregnant with our first son, and we're going to father a son. Mm-hmm. What were some things that in those early years that were kind of setting us up? I know that we've had a governing verse that we've had out of the Psalms.
Sure. Yeah. You want me to read that?
Yeah. It might be helpful to go ahead and share.
All right. So this is a go-to verse for us. This is Psalm 144, verse 12. And this is the English Standard Version. It says, "May our sons in their youth be like plants full grown, and our daughters like corner pillars cut for the structure of a palace." And so if you know that that your sons have this destiny on their life to be mature, to be owning responsibility, to be sacrificial, to be initiators, if you see those attributes, then you see that a son should be like plants full grown, even in their youth. We kind of take that phrase to be prematurely mature. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That can look like a lot of things. You know, I put a list down here of the things that I wanted as outcomes in their lives, and I knew they needed to be able to work hard. So that expression, we picked, you know, lawn care, and we had a very tough summer of dropping giant oak trees and chopping and repainting a house. And we knew that being able to labor hard was going to be some big part of their identity.
Yes. And even I would say even in earlier years, when they were in their toddler preschool years, there was habit formation in terms of taking care of their room, in terms of our children have laundry responsibilities at very young ages, responsibilities in the kitchen at very young ages, because those were, you know, those were ways that we wanted them to be prepared in adulthood. So we often talk about the formation of a child, but what's interesting is that we're actually forming adults. And it doesn't mean that we treat our children like adults, but that we are actually in the process in conjunction with God and with one another and with who the child is for their formation as adults. So some of the things that I think working, the work ethic, and having responsibility over the work given to them, we always wanted them to see as a gift and to see as part of the responsibility that...
Yeah, labor is good.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. And then in terms of like, there were things that I did with the sons that I did not do with my daughters. One of them was this thing we called gonk, which was I would take my ball cap off and we would just crash foreheads. Which, you know, there's no great reason for that other than I think it was kind of teaching them in some sort of very primitive way that we can knock heads together literally, mm-hmm. and that we can knock heads together either relationally or have conflict or different thoughts. I mean, the adult manifestation of this is argumentation and brain fighting, right? But like at a little age, I wanted them to know you can knock a head and it'll sting a little bit and you kind of rub that. But I wanted there to be a innate toughness to them that I never played gonk really with my daughters. Mm-hmm. I wanted a different outcome for them. And so I related to them differently.
Mm-hmm. I think also mothering, and, you know, we can talk some more about this expression with our daughters, but as mothers of sons and knowing there was a natural, like an innate daring nature in them. And part of that, I think, was formed by stories, and maybe we'll get into this when we talk more about education in future episodes, but, you know, from very, very little ages, I read aloud to the kids, and I wanted them to have actual heroes in these stories to emulate. And so you see, like we experienced in our sons, you know, when they read Narnia, when they experienced Calvin and Hobbes, when they experienced all these different Tolkien and the Hobbits, and, you know, that they, in their nature, they wanted to pick up sticks and go and fight battles. They wanted to use trash can lids as shields. I remember all of our children, and when they were little, you know, building teepees in the backyard and dressing themselves as, you know, as Native Americans and explorers, and, you know, going on adventures in our backyard, even though our backyard was fenced in. It was not wild. But I think there's something that sometimes we see that wildness in our sons. And I think as mothers, maybe more so, there's this desire to keep them safe. And so we want to, or at least I wanted to at times, to say, oh, be careful. You know, that was my instinct. So I think as a mother of sons, that I had to push past that desire to always tell them no or keep them safe and allow them to take risks, allow them to jump off of things that looked really high off the ground, or to climb high in trees, or to hike or climb rocks, you know, to be able to take those or live in adventurous ways through story in their play, in their pretend play. So that also, I think, is another way that in through imagination and through story that they actually had these heroic adventures and like this kind of tenacious spirit that would rise up in them, really, in so many ways.
Well, risk taking and danger and overcoming odds and having to think on the fly and innovate. I mean, the world isn't going to treat them with kid gloves. They're not going to be gentle with them. Mm-hmm. So the more that they're encountering that early in life and understanding, okay, yeah, I did that. I sprained my ankle. Mm-hmm. I dislocated my elbow, whatever it is. And I survived, and we keep going. And mm-hmm. there was a lot of really great part of that as well. I wanted to talk about the difference between starting around age 13, a transition from little boys to men. You know, it's not like there's a special day as they turn 13 or an hour where they cross some threshold, but we did have a ceremony we borrowed from, you know, Hebrew culture, and we did a bar mitzvah, and it was an invitation across a threshold into the world of men. Mm-hmm. We didn't want them to have a prolonged youth and teenage years. And by the way, teenage is a marketing category that came post-World War II, and it was that Madison Avenue figured out that there was a whole marketing segment to the 13 to 18-year-old category, and they had more money than there had ever been before. And so they develop teenager as a group, but that's rather recent, right? In the 20th century. And prior to that, you just sort of entered the world of men. And so we wanted that to be their experience. Mm-hmm. It's not, we're trying to keep this childhood going as long as possible. Mm-hmm. So at 13, the boys start operating with me, and they went to men fire pits, and they went to Sunday night prayer with other men, and they basically folded in and went to men's retreats and that sort of thing. And we had a great group of men who really embraced them and brought them in and invested time in them and knew that they were being treated differently, probably in some ways. The hard joking, the hard ribbing kind of came in phases. You know, it's not like you're trying to jack this 13-year-old kid in the face, you know, but they were getting invited to go play Ultimate Frisbee with other men and get knocked down. And it was all really good stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think that was an important shift around 13, is to get them more oriented toward the world of adulthood.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if childhood is kind of this experience where they are engaging with things through their own little tiny sphere of home, mostly because we homeschooled, that was their primary orientation to the world. And so was through both our parenting, through anybody who came in and out of our house, was through the organizations and groups that we are participating in. But at 13, you kind of have this releasing into the world, not in a way of, you know, at 18 when you're moving out of our home, but in a way that's saying the world is larger than our home. And here is the world of men. And what I hope is that in the stories, in their experience, in the ways that they've seen our marriage, that they've seen us interact with other men and women within our home, the ways that we've had conversations, the stories we've read, the, you know, the Bible heroes or the missionary stories, the heroes of faith that we've discussed, that that kind of begins, that embodiment in fictional characters becomes realized as they now are entering the world of men and are able to see that in people of our community, in the people within reach. And I think what is so tremendous about that is, you know, there's only one of each of us, but we are also only one picture of a man, one picture of a woman. We're not the totality. And so it's really wonderful, I think, for our sons to have had the experience to be able to experience other men in faith, other men who are fathers, other men who are husbands, beyond just our home, to be able to see expressions of faith in lots of different ways too.
Yeah, especially because if they only ever saw us, there would be a question mark in their mind like, yeah, but also, maybe dad's just a weirdo. Like, I don't see that in other fathers, or mm-hmm. I don't see that in other men. So when you begin to see the household of faith function as the household of faith, and they hear other men pray, and they hear other men talk about what they're facing with their wife or their children, they begin to put the world together in a way that there's a lot more reinforcing than if I just said it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So those both, there's the both and. There's the, I would say, as a mother, once again, to speak to the mothering sons aspect, that there was also a, not taking a back seat in the sense of a lack of importance, but a taking a back seat in terms of not being the primary role maker, so to speak, not being the primary person of formation that I had been maybe in their childhood, and being able to release them into really camaraderie, male camaraderie, and understanding what it would mean to be, to grow into being young men.
And it's important to note that not all women are comfortable with that, right? I mean, I think that that can be, there can be some tension there.
Sure. I mean, like anything, I mean, based on our own experience as daughters, dependent on our own, the ways that we trust or don't trust our husbands, the ways that our connection, our depth of connection into the body of Christ, all of these things impact our connection, you know, with our children and the ways that we form that.
I think that there were times where I was like laughing because, you know, the world of men, it makes sense to me, but I think what is sort of humorous to me is to try and extrapolate out and imagine from a woman's perspective what male culture is like. And I can understand misgivings about that, like, oh, he's only 13 or he's only 14 years old. Is he really ready for all of that? I can get that. I can understand that.
So do you want to talk at all about the specific maybe ways that looked, or ways like
what,
when
what
you're talking
the,
about the world of man, mm-hmm. you know, which mm-hmm. is, I had four brothers and, you know, a father, husband, two mm-hmm. sons. I have brother-in-laws, you know, we are well connected into a community of faith here where there, I have lots of touch points with other men. But what do you mean by, when you're talking about,
I mean all of the things that aren't necessarily the things that are spoken. It's the stuff that is unspoken. It's just the culture of men.
Okay.
So, the way that, for instance, here's a good example. C.S. Lewis talks about a little white field mice, mm-hmm. which is men don't like to look each other in the eye and say, "Hey, Steve, I really appreciate you. You're a very important man in my world. Mm-hmm. That's not how guys show friendship and connection. They say, hey, I'm way into little white field mice. And the other guy goes, really? You like the white mice? I like the brown field mice. Oh, really? Why? Oh, yeah. Well, the brown mice are way better because they X, Y, or Z. There needs to be an externalized third thing. And so you build friendship and relationship around this third object. There has to be this thing that we can all look at and talk at and about without having to do that one-on-one. And that's just a difference, I think, between men and women. Mm-hmm. Men and women, I think, from what I can tell, women are relational and they really value that eyeball to eyeball and talking about heart and meaning and value and all that. And that makes dudes pretty uncomfortable, and you can actually find yourself very much on the outside in the world of men if there's a lot of that kind of talk. Don't make this weird. Why are we making this kind of uncomfortable? I wish you wouldn't say stuff like that.
So do you think that that's why, you know, back to your Lewis field mice analogy, mm-hmm. do you think that's why, like, a lot of men gravitate and toward their sons gravitate towards sports?
Absolutely.
Or gravitate towards, like, having a shared interest, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Going hunting or going fishing or, you know, whatever other male camaraderie activities there.
Asking a dude to be your best friend is absolutely the worst way to get a good friend. Yes.
I know. I still remember when there was some point, and I don't think it was already to 13, but it was, you know, with one of the boys, I had said, hey, do you want to have a play date with them? They're like, Mom, we do not have play dates anymore. I was like, okay, I'm sorry. I don't know what to call it. Do you want to have a hangout? Just even having to change language. Mm-hmm. And I think for women, for mothers, we have experienced so much, and especially when you are homeschooling, because you've been so involved with your children's lives and with who they are, and talking with them about virtue, talking with them about wisdom, talking about them, about their words, about how they use their hands, about all these various things, about their habits of personal care. So when it comes to the teen years, I think there is and can be, I think, back circling back to what you said earlier, for women, for mothers, I think it can be really hard to release our sons. And we can talk about that with daughters in the next episode differently, but I think it can be hard to release our sons in the sense of letting them enter a space that we're not going into.
Yeah. And it's a space that they just have to figure out on their own, and it'll be ups and downs.
Yeah.
But man, the risk of not releasing a son into that is, there's potential really delayed problems there. Mm-hmm. Like, that's very dangerous. I think about, this is something that some of the other guys and I were talking about recently, was that men tend to be friends with other men that they respect. That's how you gain status among other men, is if you're really good at something. And that is sort of interesting if you think about, like, all the caper movies or like Mission Impossible teams or Ocean's 11. It's like everybody has a specialty, like, oh, he's real good with the tech. Oh, he's real good with weapons. Oh, he's real good with whatever. The way that you form those friendships and camaraderie is based on just they're really good at something. Mm-hmm. That guy is hilarious. If we're going to go do a thing, that guy is the funniest guy. So he should definitely be brought along. But, you know, those are the kinds of interpersonal and social nuances that really only come out the more you experience male culture.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I agree. And, you know, knowing for our young men, for our sons, that we want for them to be comfortable leading home. I mean, eventually neither of our sons are married yet, but we want them to be, they want to be one day. And so thinking about, there will be places in their life that they will be decision makers, that they're going to have to take their own risks into unknowns, that they're going to have to be thinking about their wife or their children's welfare and wanting them to feel like they have strong muscles, so to speak, figurative muscles in those areas to be able to make those decisions. And I do want to qualify also to say I have, you know, as we're kind of creating these artificial curtains, so to speak, about the world of man or the world of women. I do want to say, like, I have excellent relationship with both of our sons. It has not been to the they go with Mark or they go into this like kind of male culture and leave me and their sisters and all other women out of it. That is not what we're saying. So I still have great relationship with them. We still, their way at college, we still talk on the phone. They'll send me texts. We'll kind of go back and forth. They still seek me for wisdom in certain areas, but usually they'll come to me for a different type of question than they would go to Mark. And I love that. And so I think the like forming the healthy male is like actually that they would be able to step out into the world and be formidable, truly.
Right.
To be able to know things are not always going to go to their way. And sometimes they're going to be disappointed. You know, one of the things that we've had all of our children had to memorize the If poem by Kipling. And part of that reasoning is because there's so much wisdom about adulthood, but especially about male adulthood in that, that you're going to be knocked down. There are going to be times that people will disappoint you or you're going to be disappointed by unknown circumstances. Do you have the right skills to be able to get back up and put yourself to work again? Do you have, you know, are you going to be crushable or are you going to actually have the fortitude and the courage and strength to be able to keep going forward to where the Lord's taking you?
Yeah, adversity and opposition are the normal resting state of the world you're going to function in.
Right.
I would also say to your point earlier, I think probably the reason there is such a good, healthy relationship between you, mother, and the boys and their sisters, or the boys and the girls that they date or whatever, is because they entered into the world of men and actually learned and were tutored.
Agreed.
About how to behave and carry themselves. And that actually accentuates their ability to interact with mother, sister, and
Agreed.
Young women.
Agreed.
If they were emotional basket cases, if they didn't know how to govern their emotions, if they ran to mommy for all sorts of things and they're 19 years old, mm-hmm. that would be a real problem. It would put a stress and some dynamics at work in your relationship that would be, I think, suboptimal.
Yes, or to the full other end of the spectrum where you see men kind of encroached in masculine culture to the hatred of women,
yeah.
to the, like, you know, not respect, not to the honor of women, but to
sure.
actually see them and belittle them. And that is also.
Yeah. other spiritually awake men will knock that kind
right.
of stuff out.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think I covered, that was a good leap into it anyway.
Yeah. I, feel like we'll probably, like all of these topics, we will be kind of bobbing in and out of them as we continue to go. But I feel like that gives us a really good, overview for at this point, just for the tidiness of time and wanting to say just a few things as to how we have loved and cared for, raised our sons, and as they are stepping out into the world of young men and flourishing.
Yeah. I would also say, related to communities of men, the viceroyproject.com is
yes,
a good
absolutely.
Resource for men. That's something that we're involved in and it's been pretty great.
Mm-hmm. And I'll link to that mm-hmm. In the show notes. All right. Well, until next time, we will, thank you for being here. Thanks for listening.
Take care.